Hi, everyone. I'm Monique. Welcome to the Find a Friend podcast, a podcast where we cover lifestyle, career, and more by finding a friend and hearing how they do what they do best. I hope along the way you learn something, feel inspired by their stories, empowered to ask questions, and motivated to achieve your own powerful goals. Let's do this. So anyway, hello, Sam. Welcome to the podcast. I'm so happy to have you on here. Well, everything that you've accomplished the last couple of years, I've been stalking you on Instagram incessantly and just living super vicariously through you, as I like to tell anybody that has a pulse. I lived abroad as well, and I feel like we had completely different experiences. I guess my first question would be just kind of explain, how did you find out about your programs that you did, and kind of explain the setup and how the first one went. You can tell people where you live first.
Cool. Yeah. Well, thank you for having me on here. So I have lived in India. I lived there for 9 months, and then I just returned from living in Tanzania in East Africa for 2.5 years. So I've spent most of my adult life abroad, and which has been very interesting and really fun. So when I was growing up, I'm from a super small town in Texas called China Grove.
Oh, like the China Grove.
Yeah, like the Doobie Brothers song, China Grove.
Do you get that all the time?
From older people, but yeah. Doobie Brothers. But yeah, population is very small. I mean, I didn't really know anything about, like, you know, the world or anything else. Wasn't until I went to college. Our college had a very, like, global perspective aspect to it. And so I kind of became very interested in just learning more about different countries, especially developing countries that a lot of people have, you know, negative stereotypes about, you know, that they call, like, you know, quote unquote, third world countries in a very mandatory way. So I kind of just through different opportunities in college, I was able to travel a little bit. I heard about the Fulbright program, which is just a really incredible fellowship meant to, like, increase cross-cultural understanding between different countries. So I applied to that and thankfully was accepted. So I got to teach at a middle school in South India for 9 months, which I really loved. Came back and went to graduate school to study journalism. And while I was in journalism school, I had heard about something called Princeton in Africa. So it's another fellowship that connects young graduates with just nonprofit work across the continent of Africa. And I always kind of had it in the back of my head of, like, that would be really interesting. I feel like I still want to travel a little bit before I settle into my career. But I was in grad school and I was focused so much on professional connections and internships and, like, starting my career. And so thinking about this fellowship felt very, like, wrong in a lot of ways. Because it was, like, a total departure from everything I'd been working towards. But I kind of reminded myself, you know, like, I might as well apply, see what happens. And I kept getting further in the application process. And I was kind of asking professors, like, what should I do? Should I take it? And they were like, no, like, probably not. And so it was a really difficult decision, but I kind of thought, you know, like, I've been thinking about this. I put all the work into applying, like, that's for a reason. I didn't do it for nothing. You know? Like, because I wanted to try something new. I want to contribute wherever I can in different places. So I got it and I accepted. And it was the best decision I could have made. I was supposed to be there for 1 year, but I stayed for 2.5. I kept extending my contract. So it was a great experience. Fellowships, I can't recommend them enough. They're really cool opportunities just to travel and try different things and usually get funding to travel and live kind of a really interesting life.
That's awesome. And are they both just for recent grads, the programs that you did, or can, like, people apply that have graduated a couple years ago, asking for a friend?
I would have to check, but I'm pretty sure, I mean, recent doesn't mean, like, a year or 2 years. I think you can be, like, 4 or 5 years out. There might be an age limit on them.
Maybe. Oh, okay.
Or something. But yeah, you don't have to be, like, fresh out of school to apply.
Okay. And then did you select the country that you wanted to teach in, or even the area or region that you wanted to teach in, or was it left to them and where they had open spaces?
Yeah, I knew when I did my Fulbright that I wanted to be in India because I had been there before kind of working at a boy's home and I really, really loved it. I wanted to go back. So I was able to select that. And then for the Princeton in Africa Fellowship, basically there's a number of nonprofits that are matched with the fellowship and they have kind of different roles that they're looking to fill. So it's kind of like you're applying to go work a full-time job at a nonprofit. So you kind of apply based on where you'd be the best fit. Like maybe you have a lot of experience and expertise in Uganda, but the only roles in Uganda are for communications and you're like a monitoring and evaluation person. So I wouldn't apply there. It's more based on my skill set, because at the end of the day, they're trying to fill a job and I need to be able to give the skill set to that. So I selected Tanzania as my first choice organization because of the organization and the role that they had available for me. But I didn't know anything about Tanzania before I went. I learned
that is crazy. Had you been anywhere in Africa before?
Yeah, I've been to the region. I've been to East Africa. So I studied abroad in Uganda and Rwanda. It was kind of a short summer program. So again, another thing where I was there for a short time and thought, man, like I really want to come back and learn a lot more and kind of, you know, do a little bit more research and just be able to educate people a little bit more about the area and the culture and all of those things. So it all worked out.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And what were some of the differences that you found from studying abroad in those places and then living there full time? Because when I studied abroad, I did it in Milan in undergrad. And then I felt like my experience during that, I was just so all about traveling. It wasn't really about studying. And, you know, I was just a 3-month tourist. But then when I ended up doing my more longer term programs, I was like having to deal with all the visa struggles and like setting up a bank account. So I'm sure you had some struggles as well, you know, making that transition. What did that look like for you?
Yeah, my study abroad was a little different because it was so short. It was only 6 weeks and you were like spending 3 weeks in Rwanda, 3 weeks in Uganda. So it was just incredibly structured. Like every day was planned out for you. You're on the bus with the rest of your friends. You're going places together. You can't go out at night, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was very like completely regimented. Whereas obviously living abroad was a lot different. Even living in India and living in Tanzania was very different because when I was in India, I knew like this is a 9-month fellowship. That's it. So it kind of felt like a countdown all the time. Like it never felt like I planted roots
because mm-hmm.
I knew that there was that time limit. Whereas with Tanzania, like I was working a full-time job with a job description, like living with a roommate, kind of being a little bit more on my own. And after 3 months, I knew like, I don't just want to be here for a year. I want to extend. So it never felt like a short-term thing that I'm counting down. It always just felt like my life, you know, like I go to the grocery store and I like walk to the bus in the morning and I like hang out with my students. And so it just was nice because it was like, I don't know how to explain it, but it was like a life, you know, and it was a life that I really loved because I love kind of small, close-knit communities. It was kind of like a very small rural village where everybody knows each other and is very kind and welcoming. And so I just really loved like being a part of a community in such a tight-knit way.
Yeah. Can you explain some of the cultural differences in both places that you experienced once you'd moved there?
Cultural differences like from the U.S.?
Yeah, from the U.S.
Yeah, living in India, I loved it. I really love India. It was one of the main cultural differences, I think, was just like the separation of men and women. So like, you know, men and women eat separately. And like in the school, the teachers' offices were separated by like men and women.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so it kind of was like all the women I was working with, I really loved, but they were like older ladies, you know, who I obviously can't hang out with them on the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Have a lot of work to do at home. They're taking care of their kids or with their husbands. Whereas the men were like younger, but I wasn't really like kind of allowed to be friends with them or hang out with them, or it kind of would have been inappropriate. So like at the end of my time there, some of my male coworkers were like, oh, let's go like to lunch. We'll take you to lunch. No problem. I was like, great. So we went and we had a really good time. It was really nice spending time with them. And they were like, oh, but don't tell anyone, like, don't tell anyone that we came here. And it, you know, it's just kind of,
oh my gosh. Yeah.
You know, it's weird that I'm like talking to you or being friends with you. Like that's something that's not really seen as okay.
Mm-hmm.
That was really interesting. And then in Tanzania, what were some differences? I don't know. There were many. I lived with, our school primarily worked with, Maasai tribe, which, is kind of a tribe in Tanzania and Kenya. How do I explain this? I wouldn't say that like cultural differences, but I got to learn so much about a new culture because I was living with, this tribe that had so many kind of really interesting and amazing and beautiful traditions. Maybe people can look at pictures online, but, basically they have a lot of traditions. Like they wear certain clothing. They have a lot of like beaded jewelry that they use in traditional dance. There's also like, a very strict age set hierarchy where like boys when they're growing up, you know, can help their mothers at home and like help with dishes and things like that. And then once they become teenagers, they have a circumcision ceremony when they're like 13.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it was just like a huge ceremony that everybody's involved in. Obviously they're circumcised, which is very painful at that age.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's just certain things that they can do at that time. So they kind of paint their whole bodies and faces black and like decorate them with white designs on their faces. And then they kind of have to stay inside. And I think they only eat meat and milk or something like that for like 3 weeks or a month or something. And then after that, they're kind of washed and they're officially seen as like men in the community that can then, they can't stay in the same house with their mom anymore. So they get their own house. And then they help to like protect cattle and they're seen as warriors in the community. So just like really interesting traditions like that, that I got to, you know, learn about and hear my students talk about and be involved in. Those are some really positive aspects of the culture, obviously, but there's also things like female circumcision that are still practiced there.
Mm-hmm.
That I would always have really interesting conversations with my students about, because some of, obviously most of them at this point are like, that's bad, we want to stop that, we're educated, we want to go back and tell our mothers to stop, you know. But some will come to school and be like, oh, I'm so excited, I got circumcised over the holiday, you know.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Conversations about that. So, you know, numerous cultural differences, and I'm just very thankful that I was able to like learn so much about a culture that's so different from mine. It was really interesting.
That is super interesting, and that sounds a little bit intense. And how long were you there before that initial culture shock wore off?
I don't know that I would say I had culture shock. I think I went in with an open mind because, again, I knew nothing about Tanzania or the place that I was living. I knew that I was going to be living with Maasai. I didn't really know what that meant. So I kind of just went in with an open mind of like, I just want to learn whatever I can. I think it just takes time for it to sink in as real, if that makes sense. Because when I first got to the school, you know, I was told, you know, this is the community we're working in. There's a lot of our students struggle with early marriage. Tanzania has one of like the highest early marriage prevalence rates in the world. So you hear these things, but then it takes a while or a few months for it to really sink in as like, wow, like my sixth grader actually almost got married when she was this girl dropped out of school when she was 14 because she got pregnant and now is married and started a family. So like even now, or by the end of my time, some of those things I don't think fully sink in of like, just like the gravity of those situations and like the reality that many of those students are facing. I think it's something that's kind of hard to process or hard to really take in. Like, these are students that I know, that I care about, that I have such a good relationship with, but really, even after all this time, I can't fully fathom what their life is like, if that makes sense.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And so how long do teachers generally do the program for, or is it just really up to them?
It depends. So the fellowship was for 1 year. After that, I signed on like as a direct employee with my organization.
Okay.
And there's a lot of, you know, international volunteers that come in and out. It could be for 2 weeks. It could be for 3 months. Some people are there for a year. There was one guy that was there for 4 years. So it really just depends on, I guess, like how long you want to stay and what kind of skills you can contribute. I was working on the communications team. So I was working to like just communicate our student stories to different supporters and try to get more, you know, money for the school. So I was kind of like a one-man team in that department for 2 years. And I ended up staying, you know, past my fellowship contract because I wanted to grow that team. And because I loved our students so much that I was like happy to just be able to share all of their stories and experiences with different people.
And then your India experience, you were there, that was a set time and you couldn't extend, or you just felt done at that point?
Fulbrights are different in every country in terms of like what you can do and who exactly you're working with. So for me, the India Fulbright, the teaching assistantship Fulbright, I was not able to extend. It was like a strict 9-month contract and that was it. But there's other Fulbrights in other countries like Laos and a couple of other places where you're able to like extend that contract for a little bit.
Okay. Okay. And then as far as preparations go, so you signed on, you signed your contract, how much prep, I mean, what is the extent that the companies or I guess organizations kind of help you get settled and teach? Cause I don't think your undergrad was in teaching, correct?
No, it was not.
So it's someone that another major, you know, could have done. And how do they prep you guys?
Fulbright is really interesting. Again, it varies from country to country. But for me, we had an orientation in Washington, D.C., and it was kind of like a 3-month crash course.
Oh, okay.
No, not 3 months. I'm sorry. 3 day.
Oh, wow. Big difference.
Very different. It just in like different teaching methodologies and strategies. And then once I got to India, we had a 1 month where we weren't at our schools and every day was just language trainings. We were learning the local language and also teacher training. We were working with a teacher trainer on different strategies and methodologies and stuff. But my teaching experience in India was interesting because I wasn't like a full-time teacher. I was a teacher's assistant. And it was interesting and sometimes a little frustrating because I wasn't sure exactly what I was supposed to be teaching.
Yeah.
And it was like, do anything. And I'm like, no, that's not helpful. Mm-hmm. It was a little hard to know like what exactly I was teaching. So I ended up doing a lot of just like U.S. culture, you know, and I was technically like a cultural ambassador for the U.S. I was teaching them a lot about like where I come from and, you know, maybe different issues that are experienced in the U.S. and stuff like that. But it was an amazing experience. I really liked it. It was challenging. I had like 55 kids in a classroom at one time, you know, and they were very rambunctious and very excited. And
wow, things. Yeah.
But it was really, I learned a lot from that. And I think just being in the classroom day to day taught me a lot about what it takes to be a teacher, and talking with my students outside of class taught me a lot about like how to support young people and different students. So then when I came to Tanzania, I didn't come on to be a teacher. As I just said, I was, you know, doing communications, but because of my teaching experience on the Fulbright, they kind of needed somebody to step in and help with our English program. Mm-hmm. So when I first get to the school, they don't know any English. They all speak Swahili or Maasai.
Oh, wow.
And then when they start seventh grade, they're expected to take 10 classes all in English, like chemistry, biology, history, civics. So we have a 1 year English program where they're just learning English.
Oh my gosh.
It's crazy. So they needed just like a kind of like an assistant, like a helper in there. So I just started helping for a little bit. And then after a few months, I completely took over that program. So I was like developing a curriculum. I was like creating, you know, reading packets. I was doing tests, vocabulary building, like all of these things. And I really loved it. It's just an incredible experience, like trying to teach someone English. Like, what do they need to know? How do they learn literacy? Like, how can they build vocabulary through a story? Like, how can they learn writing skills through grammar? All of these things. So it's kind of in charge of that program of 45 kids, like trying to teach them as much English as possible so they don't fail their classes in seventh grade.
That's wild.
It was crazy. But it was like the most fulfilling thing that I did there. You know, at that age, the kids are, you know, very sweet and young. So they see you as like their mom. And sometimes they would like accidentally call me mama. I'm like, God, I'm Sam. It's just really fun. And I, you know, I do think I learned a lot through doing. And I think that I, you know, I just really enjoyed it. And I would think every day, like, what can I do? Like, what else can I be doing to make sure that these guys are as prepared as possible? So like, it really gave me like a great love of teaching that maybe I didn't have as much before because I had a lot of challenges in India teaching, but where sure. I felt very comfortable, which was really nice.
Yeah. And so you said you taught your Indian students about American culture. What are some things that they already knew and then things that maybe you were surprised that they didn't know about?
That's a good question. I think there's a lot that they don't know about, but I would say that the main thing that they know or think they know, understandably, both in India as well as in Tanzania and probably around the world, is just like that Americans are very wealthy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think their perception is like, oh, there's poor people in America? No way. Like, I don't understand. Like, America's helping all these other countries. Why are they not helping their own people? And I'm like,
yeah, good question.
So I think like explaining some of the class structures in America is very interesting. And explaining things like cost of living, you know, because it is like, yeah, we have like comparatively more money, but like things cost a lot more in the US. Like you have to have a car to get around. You need to pay rent. You need to buy food. That's way expensive.
All mm-hmm.
Explaining that was really interesting. Because again, the perception around the world is like, no, America's super rich. If they're such a rich country, why are people poor? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's interesting. What are some misconceptions that people have about the places that you taught that you want to clarify?
Yeah, I think especially when you're talking about obviously an African country, I don't know that there's like a specific misconception, but I think just a general understanding, you know, or a general tone that people use when they talk about those countries. Like one thing that I always, that always really irks me a little bit is if I talk about like, oh, I live in Tanzania, like I'm going to Uganda, people say like, oh, you're so great, you know? never say, if, you know, I'm going to Ireland or like Switzerland or something like that. So I think just a misconception that it's dangerous or like, you know, just very like people are very ignorant, I guess. I always have felt safer in Tanzania or in India, much safer than I feel here in America. You know, I feel like in America, I'm always paranoid. Like I have to walk to my car with pepper spray in my hand. I could pretty much just walk around. I could walk through the village by myself and everyone would be kind to me and look out for me. You know, I walked to different restaurants near my house at night in India and I always felt fine. I knew that people were looking out for me. So I think that perception that like these other countries are dangerous or like rife with crime, I think is one. And then also just a general attitude of like pity, you know, like talk to people about certain things, you know, even just general issues, right? There's issues in America. There's issues there. You know, if maybe I talk about like, oh, you know, some kids, like, I don't know if I'm describing the students, people be like, oh, that's so sad. Like, oh, you know, like, I think just a tone of like, maybe people in African countries are like very helpless or something. Mm-hmm. It's a very sad place. We have to help, you know? And I think that makes it hard to talk about some of the realities there because I don't want to perpetuate that stereotype. Because at the end of the day, like there's challenges. Our students overcame a lot, you know, but they're happy. They live great lives. You know, they're normal kids who like to like play basketball, you know, and like dance and do different things like that. So I think just that's why I am very active on Instagram, as I'm sure you know. I want people to see more of that place because I think if you're exposed to it, then you are able to understand it better and like empathize with it more in a way that's not filled with pity or fear, but just like, oh, you know, there's a kid living their lives, you know, like it's different from my life, but like, look at them, you know, they're doing this, they're doing that. And so I just want people to like see more of it and see that at the end of the day, like everyone around the world is like a normal person, you know, living a normal life. They have different challenges than we do, but you know, I just want them to see a little bit more of it, I guess.
No, that makes total sense. Can you just kind of explain like the structure? Enlighten me and everybody else as to what kind of the societal structure wise where you taught in Tanzania.
The school was called Orkiswa School. So it's in a village called Orkiswa. And they pull students from surrounding villages. There's four. So there's Orkiswa, Lashaini, Lindakenya, and Ingarash. So they're kind of like villages that are near each other and all the kids will go to Orkiswa village for school. And then I lived in Monduli town as well as most of the teachers. So it was just like a kind of like the town center, very small town, and then like a 15-minute drive to school in the morning out to the village. So most of the students, we're a new school. We're only 11 years old. So we've just started getting students who graduated from our school, which is a secondary school, went on to university and are now finishing university. So we don't have like a lot of, you know, stats yet on where they're ending up because the school's so, but primarily for the most part, students will graduate from our school and then go to university. There's a really big university in Dar es Salaam, which is like the big city in Tanzania. There's also universities in Dodoma, which is the capital, in Arusha, which is the city about an hour and a half away from our school. So there's lots of universities around the country. They'll go to one of those universities, and what we are starting to see and hoping to see, because it's the goal of the school, is these students graduating from university and coming back to their village and their community and trying to create local change. So we've just hired a couple of our graduates as teachers at school, which is really exciting. One of our teachers now, his name is Hosea, he was in our first class of students when the school first started 11 years ago. There was no building. It was just like in the back of a really small church. So he graduated from Orkiswa, finished university, and is now a teacher. But he's not just a teacher, he's teaching biology, but he's also a counselor and he's the football coach. And he teaches life skills, which are, you know, about kind of navigating peer pressure and having healthy study habits. So it's really amazing to see him like work directly with students, students who are him essentially. Like he used to be one of those students. What we're seeing and what we, you know, what is our ultimate goal is like creating community-based leaders. So like not students who are going to get an education and then, you know, move to the city and like, you know, make a lot of money and never come back home. Like we want our students to feel invested in their community so that they're able to come back and like change the things that they want to change, whether that's female circumcision or, you know, sustainable agricultural practices or women's empowerment workshops. So that's kind of the goal, and that's what we're starting to see. Again, it hasn't been a long time, so we're still just now getting university graduates, but we are already seeing that, and it's really incredible to be a part of because it just makes Orquesta feel like such a family. You know, like these graduates who go on to university always come back during the holidays and like volunteer their time coaching or teaching in the classroom or helping out with communications at school. It's just really awesome to see that like this is a place that they consider their home and they want to come back to.
And that's an interesting point that you make about leaving and then coming back, because I remember when I did grad school in London that there was a scheme that they had with these countries, some that were in Africa and then some were in South America as well, where we had kids that came and they came on a full ride, and the goal was that you go back to your country and that you do implement that change. And I think that's interesting that you're saying that that's kind of the same way that the cultural expectations were set up there.
Yeah, and I think that there's also a couple of like, or at least one university in Africa that's like top tier, you know, for creating the next generation of African leaders. And I think that students go to that university, and I think it's, you know, in a contract as well that like you have to go stay on the continent and do some work here, trying to help implement some of the changes that you think are needed, which is nice, you know, because again, I you know, having like white people go over to Africa, you know, that's been the model for a long time, you know, and it's unfortunate and a little uncomfortable, you know, even to be a part of, right? But I think that change does come from like local leaders, you know, as long as you give them the tools that they need, they're able to implement all the changes that they want, which is really cool.
I'm kind of going into grad school a little bit because I did grad school abroad. I want to hear more about your doing grad school here in the States. So how did you end up picking your university?
I'm just really lucky that I, with all of these opportunities, like, you know, you and I went to St. Edward's, which is, you know, I loved being there. It was a great university. It connected me to so much. So like all of these programs, like Fulbright, Princeton in Africa, I didn't know about until advisors at St. Ed's told me about them.
Mm-hmm.
Same with my grad school. One of my professors knew that I was thinking about grad school. And so she told me about a fellowship opportunity that another alumna had gotten at Syracuse University. They have a communication school called Newhouse, which is a really incredible school. They have a great journalism program, and they actually have a fellowship for minorities. So it's a fully funded graduate fellowship aimed at diversifying kind of the voices and representation in media. So she had told me about it, and I looked into it. It looked like a great opportunity. I was really stressing. I was a senior in college. I was really stressing about grad school. I was like, I don't know. What do I do? I'm just not going to apply. And my dad was like, just apply. Like, you get it. You get it. You don't get it. No problem. At least, you know. So, you know, it's like a 2 weeks before the deadline. I'm like, okay, I'm going to apply. So I'm trying to get everything together. Fortunately, I, you know, got in and was accepted. I also, you know, got my Fulbright, so I deferred, and then I was able to, you know, go after the Fulbright, which was really a great opportunity.
Oh, that's awesome.
And for anybody considering fellowships, like if you get into a school and you also are applying for fellowships, you can always, I think, you can defer that admission, which is what I was able to do. So when I was on my Fulbright, I just had to submit like an extra letter, just kind of like restating my intentions with the program to continue with it. And I was actually given an even better offer after deferring. So I didn't get the fellowship. The fellowship was like a year and a half. Like you get a full stipend and full tuition, and you get like an internship at, like a local news media. I didn't get that, but I was a finalist. So they flew me out actually from India to Newhouse to interview, for the fellowship. And I didn't get the fellowship, but I did get a full scholarship and stipend, which was obviously a great help.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, no, that's incredible. I mean, we hear all the time how expensive school is in America. So now you're back, and you were talking a little bit about this before we started recording, but do you feel like you're ready to set roots down in the US, or do you feel like you have a couple more global experiences left in you?
I don't know, but yeah. Now that I, you know, 27, I kind of want to use the rest of my 20s to just try different things. I just think it's so important to learn about the world and about different places, and all of those experiences just like give you so many skills and so much humility and so much new knowledge that you can bring with you into anything. domestic or in the US. So I think I'm going to look for things abroad. I'm not entirely sure, but I would recommend anybody to just like, you know, try new things and like, don't feel like you have to rush into like settling down or they're worried about people's expectations. You know, my parents are confused by my decisions. I support them and are like, okay, well, we don't understand, but like, you're going to do what you want to do. So I hope that, you know, I just think it's important to learn a little bit about the world before jumping into anything else.
I definitely advocate. You can get out. And if you come back, I mean, great. And if you end up staying abroad, great. But I mean, go abroad at least for a little bit, or, you know, get out of your hometown at least for a little bit. See what's out there. There's just so much out there. Take a long road trip, you know, you just got to get out. For people that are looking, I guess wrapping this up, people that are looking to go abroad, maybe pursue these opportunities, what is a good starting place?
Yeah, I would say, you know, again, I'm just a big proponent of fellowships. Like even now I might look into a fellowship. Such cool opportunities, you know, and it's things that you wouldn't have heard about maybe unless you were looking specifically for a fellowship. But I mean, I would obviously recommend Fulbright and Princeton in Africa. Princeton in Africa is obviously a little bit lesser known, but it has so many incredible opportunities in a number of countries across the continent. And again, it's not just like a, you know, holiday in Africa, like you're working. I was working like 60, 70 hour weeks, you know.
Uh-huh.
The organization is a little bit different from others, so you wouldn't have to be working that much. But, you know, it's just a professional development opportunity. You're working a full job, but you're in a new place learning about a different environment. And then ProFellow is a really cool website as well. Tons, hundreds of different kinds of fellowships for all kinds of different professions or fields. You know, some of them are domestic, some of them are abroad, but I think that's a really cool website that I found recently. Those are the main recommendations I can give. Princeton in Africa, Fulbright, and then any other kind of fellowship opportunity you can find.
Okay, perfect. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I mean, I literally could talk about this all day long. I'm just so fascinated by cultures that are so different. Thank you for coming on.
Of course. I'm so happy we got to catch up.
Details of this episode can be found on our site, findyourfriendpodcast.com. Keep up with us on Instagram at Find a Friend Podcast, and be sure to subscribe and leave a review wherever you listen to your fave podcast. Thanks for listening.